Hi, I'm Cassie McCullough, and this is Common Knowledge, where we sort through the deluge of cultural ephemera and see what it can tell us about the world and maybe even ourselves.
And I'm Jason DiRosso, and today it's all about big things, big concepts and big claims, starting with the website that's gone from geek fortress to one-stop shop for all things that are new online, Reddit, the self-proclaimed front page of the internet.
And also today, a very big theory. Have you ever had the feeling that everything is speeding up, like everything? Well, this may be because we're heading towards what's called the singularity, and it may only be a few decades away.
The singularity is a time when computer power grows without limit, surpassing human intelligence, sweeping aside everything in its path.
It's like nothing that we've ever seen before. It keeps growing and changing, like it has a mind of its own.
The bottom line is we are one human-machine civilization.
Dear God, you're saying this country is completely open to attack.
Theoretically, we could be under attack already.
Now, given this is a special time of year on the Christian calendar in particular, and one during which we contemplate the big picture, we thought we'd take the opportunity to stand back and look at some of the big ideas that are hovering around in the ether. And to do this, we thought we needed someone with a brain the size of a planet. And so today our guest is Mark Pesce. Hi, Mark.
Hi there.
Now, Mark is a futurist, a digital ethnographer, and an author of a number of books, including one that's in progress called The Next Billion Seconds, which is about technology, hyperconnectivity, and everything in between. So thanks for being with us for the next 1,500 seconds or so, Mark.
Thank you. All right, Mark. Well, look, let's go to our first item now. And to a question, do you know who Eric Martin is? In a recent photo, the bearded, tweed-wearing, pipe-smoking 30-something looks every bit the hipster entrepreneur, and this week he shot to the top of an online poll at Time magazine's website for most influential person of the year, all because Eric is general manager of the website Reddit, an online forum where user submissions get ranked according to the number of views they attract and if they're liked or disliked. Its content is divided into topics from politics to science to music and movies, and it seems that this is Reddit's moment. Last year, the site more than doubled its page views per month, reaching 2 billion page views in the month of December. If you haven't seen it yet, it's not just about sharing pictures of keyboard kittens. The way Reddit influences...
A lot of it is.
Nothing wrong with that. But the way Reddit influences opinion and galvanizes lobbies has made people take notice. Mark Pesce, why does this seem to be Reddit's moment?
I think that Reddit is really the sort of culmination of everything that's been going on really since the first internet bulletin boards and what we would call newsgroups got started back in the 1980s. And we learned a little bit about how to have a conversation and then how to have a conversation that has a point and then how to have a conversation that has a point that translates into action in the real world and then a conversation that has a point that translates into real action that turns into people learning things that then feeds back into the conversation. Now, you know, 20 years in, we're pretty good at all of this, and Reddit has managed to take all of that and put it in a single place for people.
It also looks, funnily enough, like something that could have existed 20 years ago. I mean, it's so simple, isn't it? It's a really old school looking board, really.
It's very old school looking. It borrows from a lot of predecessors such as Slashdot, where you could vote posts up and down, and it was a place where geeks went to talk about geek things. And really, so it represents all that's been learned in 20 years of net culture about how people can have a discussion that's actually useful.
So maybe we should describe it in case some people listening haven't been there. It's sort of like lines of text which link to other material, and you can vote up or down, and this is on the front page of the internet, and it could be, like you say, Jason, a kitten on a keyboard, or it could be someone's treatise on Mitt Romney or whatever.
And a particular post of note was happened recently when a Sydney cyclist posted about a road rage incident with some bolshy motorists, and that story was turbocharged via Reddit, and you know, within about 24 hours, it was picked up by the mainstream media, ended up in newspapers, on free-to-air television. So this is the kind of impetus that Reddit will give a story.
It can accelerate things enormously. And again, I think that's because it represents the point where all the tools are meeting the people, and the people are now so good with the tools, and Reddit being this big tool, that if you have something that's hot, when it hits Reddit, it can just go massive immediately.
So it's like a kind of funnel. Everything sort of comes into a central point.
Yes, and then it's up to sort of the mob about whether they like it or not, whether they're going to read it. It takes the job of looking at what thousands of people are thinking and really distills it down very quickly.
I was really interested to see that there was this history graduate, military enthusiast, James Irwin, who wrote a post about what would happen if the US Marines went up against Roman centurions. And within a short amount of time, he'd basically been headhunted by a Hollywood studio, and he's writing the script to this high concept movie.
People just kept adding what they thought would happen, and experts put in detail, like military detail, from both Roman stuff to cutting edge US military technology.
But it does, I think, it triggers the question, though, in my mind at least. You mentioned the word mob earlier, and there are people who are criticising at the moment this notion of the hive mind, and have been criticising for years, actually, the notion of the hive mind and the wisdom of, I suppose, the sort of online collective democracy that we see here. Mm. Marines versus Centurions isn't exactly, you know, the basis for a high art film.
It's not Anna Karenina.
It could be.
It could
but
be.
Do we get a real lowest common denominator kind
is
of democracy?
Is it mob rule or is it online democracy?
Yes. I think you're going to get both out of the bargain there. It is interesting because when you have a group of people participating, and really what's come out of this is he had this initial idea, and then everyone in Reddit sort of piled in, and then a producer comes in and goes, oh, wow, there's all these good ideas that we could work with here. That's really, it's an engine for creating lots of ideas. It's not necessarily the best engine for filtering that into a coherent story.
But is it the best ideas or the most popular ideas? I mean, I wonder too if, I mean, the real genius ideas in the history of ideas have often been so out there when they've first been thought of and conceived that most people at that given time in history would have opposed the idea. But so where would Darwin be on Reddit?
There'll be a corner in Reddit, though, where those people have found each other and are going, yeah, I'm going to vote this idea up. Now, there's going to be a whole bunch of other people coming in and saying, well, we think you're ridiculous and wrong, and you know, Lamarck is right and Darwin is wrong. So that's going to be going on, too. But those people will be able to carve out a place inside of this larger Reddit sphere for being able to explore ideas. And I think that's the thing, is that it is the true broad church in that sense. It can have that kind of dissent, and it's a framework which allows that dissent to be sustainable, which makes it more like a democracy than like a mob.
Look, this is actually where I feel often, and my admission is that when I go to Reddit, for me it's a bit like more like, I don't get it, because a lot of the conversations are so full of jargon that's referring to, I don't know, memes and other stories and other sites that I don't...
And they're built on years of participation in a community, but there would be communities in Reddit that you would feel completely comfortable in that I would feel alien in. That's what I mean.
Another interesting thing that's happened during the elections, or that whole process of trying to find the Republican candidate, the activist side to Reddit's really quite interesting, and it's shown itself to be quite a powerful internet tool where people online were, for example, sharing interesting, well, important new ways and very efficient new ways to combat, for example, Santorum. There was a very strong gay rights lobby that mobilized via Reddit so that they made sure that when you Googled Santorum's name, something quite sexually explicit came up. And that was all something that was, I guess, maintained via Reddit, which is interesting. But I just want to mention Jaron Lanier here, who's a guy who has a lot of problems with sites like Reddit and the hive mind concept that they represent. He says that for the most part, the hive mind is boring and stupid. Why pay attention to it?
I think most of the time, most human minds are boring and stupid, but they have their moments. And I think that that's part of the point, is that we can capture those moments. We can amplify those moments. So if we have a technology that allows us to capture and amplify those moments, we probably want to use them. There's something called Sturgeon's Law. Sturgeon's Law is 90% of everything is dreck. It's probably not a bad rule of thumb. And so you really do have this sense that, yes, there's going to be an enormous amount of stuff going on there, and most of it won't be relevant. But again, a lot of that's, well, who's it relevant to? I mean, there are people who are going to want to talk about Darwin versus Lamarck. There are people who are going to want to talk about Santorum versus civil rights. And for these people, those conversations are incredibly relevant, even if someone else who doesn't know a lot about it thinks that it's not meaningful.
So it's kind of like an internet within an internet then?
It's the internet personified, yeah, probably internet sort of concentrated.
Okay, that's good enough for me. I still wonder if the truly genius ideas are ever going to find their birthplace in places like Reddit, or if they're going to need a much warmer, safer haven to ferment and emerge.
A garret, perhaps.
Garret somewhere, exactly. An internet garret.
Yeah, but once you made your big discovery, where are you going to share it? Reddit.
You're listening to Common Knowledge here on RN. I'm Jason DiRosso, and with me is co-host Cassie McCullough, and our guest today is futurist Mark Pesci, an honorary associate in the University of Sydney's Digital Cultures program.
And now, from one of the single biggest focus points of the interwebs to an idea that's so big it has no limits. The singularity is, in fact, so complex and all-consuming that a mere human mind can't comprehend it. A mind unaided by technology, that is. It's also known as the technological singularity, and it's a theory that predicts in the very near future, some say just decades away, we'll enter superintelligence, that our brains will be reverse engineered by technology. Some say it's already started in lots of ways. It's based on the acceleration of the creation and development of technology, which appears to be exponential. And let's face it, who doesn't think that life is forever speeding up? Mark, is the world really speeding up? And is this what the singularity feels like?
Yes. In short, life is definitely speeding up. The thing that we need to understand about knowledge is that knowledge is not static. Knowledge is used to create more knowledge, which then means there's more knowledge around to create more knowledge. And so just looking at that, just that's not additive. That's exponential. It grows and it grows and it grows and it grows out of all bounds. And then there's this thing called the law of large numbers, right? Once you get a certain number of doublings, those doublings start to get really big. You're not going from 2 to 4 anymore. You're going from 1 million to 2 million or 1 billion to 2 billion. And that seems to be where we are in the accumulation of knowledge now. We know so much now that the amount we might know, say, about the genome is doubling every year or two. Every year or two now, twice as much is known than was before. Is there a limit to this? Does knowing all of this change us? Well, it certainly gives us more capabilities because the more we know, the more we can do.
All right. So let's just start with a really concrete example. In my household, there are 3 remotes for the TV, stereo, PC kind of conglomeration that we watch stuff on. And someone said to me, hey, you know, this remote can learn what these other 2 remotes do, so we can just get rid of those 2. Now, is that the singularity?
Well, one reading of the singularity is that we're teaching our machines so well that eventually they're just going to learn everything that we've learned and they're not going to need us around anymore.
So will that remote control Cassie in the end, boss her around?
He won't need me.
Turn her on and off.
This is the thing, though, with a lot of people's idea about the singularity is that they foresee a time when humans are going to be fighting against their creations.
And that's a common theme in science fiction for the last 50 years.
Yes, I think actually we have a very familiar voice explaining to us a little bit about the singularity.
In 3 years, Cyberdyne will become the largest supplier of military computer systems. All stealth bombers are upgraded with Cyberdyne computers becoming fully unmanned. Afterwards, they fly with a perfect operational record. The Skynet funding bill is passed. The system goes online on August 4th, 1997. Human decisions are removed from strategic defense. Skynet begins to learn at a geometric rate. It becomes self-aware at 2:14 a.m. Eastern Time, August 29th. In a panic, they try to pull the plug.
Skynet fights back.
Yes.
Well, that's the former governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, from Terminator 2, explaining what Skynet is. And as you say, Mark, this concept of all-knowing intelligence taking over the world isn't one that's unfamiliar to science fiction.
No, or to anyone who uses Google.
So, well, is Skynet Google?
Well, I mean, this is of course, a common joke in geek circles now. Has Google become self-aware? Is it Skynet? Is it going to attack us? It's certainly learning everything that we do. It's certainly watching all of us. The question about whether it's aware or not is a little almost mystical, right? There's this whole thing about when can you tell whether something's alive, when can you tell whether it's aware.
You mean like I'm going to turn on the computer one day and go, hey, the internet's awake?
Yeah, well, yeah, but the thing is that at the end of all the internet is 2.5 billion people using the internet, and they're certainly all awake and alive. So how can you draw this line between saying, well, this part's dead and this part's alive if there's all these live people attached to it?
Consciousness is a really odd, it's a really difficult concept, I think, to quantify. And it strikes me that in this debate, a lot of these technologists are talking about technology is going to become conscious because it will just have so much information.
Mm.
And it strikes me that human consciousness isn't about having information. Human consciousness is about experiencing emotion.
Well, there's a lot of different ways of qualifying human consciousness. That's one of them. I think that there's a lot of sort of almost magical thinking about this, that if you throw enough information at a box or if you give it enough processors or bammo, all of a sudden it's alive. And again, there's no direct proof of this, which is one reason why I think it's probably less likely that we're going to certainly turn a computer on one day and it's going to go, hey there.
Hi.
Versus the relationship between humans and computers becomes fuzzier and fuzzier and fuzzier until it's very hard to tell where one begins and the other ends. And frankly, I think we've already sort of gotten to that point with our mobiles.
With our smartphones,
They're the extension of the consciousness. The singularity began, well, you could argue that it's as old as time, but the theory itself began with this really around 1983 and Ray Kurzweil.
Right.
Now, explain his vision of the singularity.
So Kurzweil, you know, again, brilliant man. Invented the first machine to read to blind people, invented a whole line of synthesizers that were very similar to and competitive with the Fairlight synthesizers, made a huge amount of money and took that money and basically invested it in doing research on what was going on in the world. And he just saw that there were all of these trends in science. So the amount we know about biology, the amount we know about computer science, the number of transistors you can fit into a chip, da-da-da-da-da. And that he saw that all of these trends were growing, and not only growing, but they were growing exponentially, and they were doubling. And he saw that if this continued, it was basically going to become nearly infinite growth relatively quickly. In other words, at some point in our lifetimes. And he termed that point the singularity.
This concept has been around for a while, and it has been made a bit of fun of. Some people call it the rapture of the nerds. It's like this idea that a point is coming where we won't need our corporeal beings anymore, that intelligence from a technological front will supersede us.
Some of it's that the computers will become so smart that we kind of don't matter. Some of it's that the computers will become so pervasive that we're sort of sucked in by them, that it's possible to sort of scan your mind and then suck it into a computer, and then you can leave inside the mind of the computer. And at that point, of course, you're essentially immortal because you don't have a body to break down anymore. So there's all these different ideas that I think of almost have a religious quality to them.
An apotheosis, perhaps.
Yes, exactly. And then I think that that's part of what's sort of driving this, that although these people who believe in the singularity generally consider themselves strongly rationalist, there's really this faith element there.
Dare I say, is there almost a Christian element to it, this notion of the flesh being corrupted and us being able to
transcend it.
Yeah.
Be perfected through technology.
Yeah, I think that there's that trend. And of course, that trend is 2,000 years old, at least in Christianity, and it's popping up again now in science.
But what happens to us? And is everybody going to get to go? I mean, are the poor people going to be allowed to come, the ones who haven't grown up with laptops?
Well, of course, the thing is that, you know, 4.5 billion people own their own mobile phone now, so it's almost as if money's not really the object anymore. It's much more sort of control and power and who's going to be the gatekeeper.
Exactly, and I don't think you can underestimate humanity's capacity to work out new ways and lucrative ways to basically exploit other human beings, you know, on the road to progress or whatever, I think. And it strikes me that there's a lot of naive optimism in some of the viewpoints expressed by some technologists.
Naive viewpoints possibly, but it's being taken very seriously by some very sober-faced people. I mean, Time magazine had the singularity on its front cover last year. There's a Singularity University in NASA's Ames Resource Park in California, right, which started a couple of years ago.
Right, the research center. And, you know, the folks at Google, so Larry and Sergey, have been regular attendees and fundies of it. So there's a lot of Silicon Valley money and influence and power really being put behind the development of these ideas.
Mm. And they've identified these areas where they think exponential growth is underway. So that's like network and computing systems, biotechnology, nanotechnology, medicine, neuroscience, artificial intelligence and robotics. And these are the ones that they're sort of helping usher into this new age, they believe.
Yeah. If you put the right elements together, you get everything to produce this thing that is the thing that liberates the body, right? That liberates the mind, that liberates the body and creates or fixes, as they say, debugs the natural state. All right, that, you know, nature is imperfect and therefore we're going to go through, fix everything and everything will be great.
Actually, our sister program, Future Tense, spoke to the head of Singularity University not so long ago. So if you want to find out more about it, we'll pop a link on the site. But why don't we just hear a little bit from Ray Kurzweil? And here he is speaking on the ABC not so long ago about the idea that humans will end up in a war with cyborg beings if the singularity happens.
I don't think it's going to be an us-them phenomena with, okay, humans on the left side of the room, computers on the right, and let's get along with each other. It's going to be all mixed up. We're all going to be enhanced by these technologies as we already are. I think we are already information, and right now we have no way of capturing that and backing it up. We will make ourselves smarter by putting billions of these, which will be the size of blood cells, in our bodies. They'll keep us healthy from inside. They will go inside our brains, interact with our biological neurons, put our brains on the internet, on the cloud of computing. It's still not a guarantee of immortality, but it's a tipping point.
A tipping point, Mark. It's due, according to Ray Kurzweil, in 2045.
Yeah, I think we're probably already well in it. I think that if we took a look back 30 years, the people we are now would be kind of weird and almost unrecognizable. And the kind of people we'll be in 30 years, 2045-ish, are going to be completely unrecognizable to the folks we are today.
Well, you know what? I'm going to be really nice to the remote control just to be on the safe side. You're listening to Common Knowledge on Radio National. I'm Cassie McCullough. And with me is Jason DeRosso and Mark Pesci. And just before we go, to our obsessions. What are you obsessing about, Jason?
I heard this fantastic radio documentary on This American Life recently, and we'll put a link to it on the website. But it's about a guy, an African-American guy, who is an Obama impersonator. And the thing is, it's just fascinating because he is so far from Obama in terms of his background and socioeconomic status. It's not funny, and yet he looks exactly like him and makes some money out of impersonating him. A fascinating look at race and class in America. It's called The Audacity of Louis Ortiz.
What a freak chance, hey, to look like that. Mark Pesci, what are you obsessing about?
The new series of Game of Thrones, Winter is Coming.
Uh-huh, the cold winds are rising.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You're both going to geek out on me.
Actually, Mark, we did talk about this on the show last week and the dilemma that people are in about wanting to keep up with the new series, but also the delay with it not coming out here for a couple of years.
And whether to pirate it.
Mm. So I don't know how you saw a copy, but we actually went to a media screening. It is great, isn't it?
Yes. I have to say, audiences will do whatever they can to get the content they want.
Yes, it certainly seems that we're in a transition phase between the next technology arriving and allowing it to see what we want when we want. But what did you think of the first episode?
I thought it was wonderful. The story is continuing to open up now. I actually, after the series aired, I went and read all 5,000 pages of the book. So I know everything that's going to happen that everyone else knows is going to happen. And now it's just wonderful watching it all be so beautifully visualized.
Well, that's all we've got time for on Common Knowledge this week. Thank you very much to Mark Pesci for being our guest.
Thank you.
Mark Pesci, futurist, digital ethnographer, and author of a number of books, including one that's online right now, and you can check it out. It's called The Next Billion Seconds.
We'll put a link to it on the website. Thanks, Mark. And don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at @RN_CK. Of course, you can podcast the show, and you can leave comments at the website. What do you think of the singularity? Are you skeptics or converts?
And do you think it explains why everything's speeding up?
abc.net.au/radionational and follow the links to the Common Knowledge program page. Time to say goodbye. I'm Jason DiRosso.
And I'm Cassie McCullough. See you next week.